This is Energy Out Loud, the podcast for energy professionals and people who want to be part of one of the most purpose-driven industries. In this podcast, you will get insights from industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators who are shaping the future of energy. I'm your host, Morten Dahlum. I'm from Norlys Energy Trading, a data-driven trading and renewable asset management house. So plug in, turn up the volume, and let's get started. Here at Norlys Energy Trading, we got our own energy research lab, a great team of PhDs and postdocs searching for answers to the future of energy. One of my colleagues here is Monica. Together with her, I'll try to explore energy futures from an academic perspective. Today, we invited Sopham from AAU Energy to share his research. So, Monica, welcome to Energy Out Loud as my co-host today.
Yeah, thank you, Morten, for inviting me to be here.
Yeah, it's my great pleasure. And obviously, what we are trying to make a deep dive into is research and academia and how that actually affects the energy and the energy industry. Before we go into that, your background and where you're coming from.
Yes, so I am actually industrial postdoc candidate here at Norlys Energy Trading. And before I joined Norlys, I actually had been working in academia, so really deep diving into research. And that's been for 5 years. And then when I finished my PhD, I joined here to actually continue this research. But now it's kind of been a different setting, so more from like a company and business point of view.
Yes. I need to ask you, why is the energy industry so interesting?
Yes, that's a very good question. In my opinion, it's like something that changes so fast. So something that we have been working a lot in recent years, or I would say even recent decades. And we always know, okay, we found solution to one thing, but then we have a bunch of new problems to solve. So it's kind of like, you know, never ending. And really like seeing some of the research and some of the new technologies that we've been working with that actually helps in climate change and this fight which we are all having. It really is kind of like a fulfilling or feels really good, just doing the job that actually makes the impact.
Exactly. And very, very inspiring. And I can say that's also, why I find the industry so interesting. And what we've agreed here as host and co-host is really to go and find people who are working within research, within academia, bring them on the podcast and have conversations with them about the work they do. And I know there's a lot of inspiring people out there working in academia, and Sopham, you're one of them. A huge welcome to the podcast Energy Out Loud here today.
Thank you so much, Morten and Monica. Yeah, it'll be great catching up and, you know, talking more about energy.
Yeah. So before we dig into that, a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I'm Shubham, basically an assistant professor right now in the Department of Energy in Aalborg University. So with all my education basically done in India, after that, I then moved to Singapore. But I have been in different countries, you know, short visits and also guest visits. So it has really, you know, put a perspective on where we can actually go, and with different kind of research that we can do. There can be different perspectives when it comes to different countries, their visions. So there is always a different direction we are going into. That's when, you know, I have heard a lot of great things about Denmark in their way of being, about their vision of life, and you can say awareness among many other things about, you know, the recent progress. That's where I actually came to Denmark, and Aalborg University is, you know, one of the leading institutions in the field of energy. So what better than here?
The best seeks the best. So I think that's what brings a lot of people to actually AAU and the energy department.
Yes.
I need to ask you the same question here. Why is the energy industry so interesting?
Yeah, I mean, you can pretty much anticipate energy is pretty much the backbone of everything around us. Even we cannot have this podcast without energy. So when it is coming to critical services as well, which can have massive social and economic repercussions in our lives, that is when we are always trying to improve, you know, different alternatives or more efficient energy, something that can be reconfigured. So we are always, you know, trying to look forward in what can be the new possibilities. And that's where I also think that apart from, you know, just lighting up our lights in our homes, can energy mean something else that we have not really identified yet?
Exactly. And that's part of the conversation that we've planned for today. But yes, before we jump into that, what is the role of research within energy?
Well, we can start with energy being generated, energy being transmitted from point A to point B, and then energy being distributed. There are a lot of technical challenges that we face today. There can be new directions on how they can be dealt with in a better way. So these are basically the different aspects on how we can improve our lives at low cost and maximizing the impact. In short, that's what I can conclude.
So it's a matter of optimizing. And now you mentioned the technical aspects, obviously also from a market perspective and from an economic and from a trading perspective, there's also a lot of things to actually work on there. Monica, any views on this? Any perspectives?
Yes, definitely. I think here in-house in Norus Energy Trading is basically kind of what we work with, where we have established this energy research lab, where we have PhDs and postdocs doing research where we think about, okay, there will be a lot of new technological advancements similar to what Shubham had said. But also the question is, how will that kind of shape the energy system in the future? And not just the energy system, but the energy market. So which rules will change? How these all new advancements and innovation we are working on now, how will that actually impact our way of work, our way of doing things in the coming years?
Yeah.
So yes, definitely a lot of different aspects that we could think of in that way.
Exactly. And now I'm coming with a perspective of being a businessman. I have collaborated sometimes with the research and with academia, but I'm really looking forward to make kind of a understanding of how research is conducted. And you're here today, Shubham, to share an example of that, some of your work. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. Where should we start here?
Yeah, I mean, I think academia is really providing the educational backbone. This is where actually everyone is getting familiar with the recent advances. And that's when they're actually going out into the industry, becoming leaders, trying to come up with new initiatives. So yes, it plays a big role. I think we are, as a research institute as well, we are always trying to think about what can be a better way of handling this. We have the solution, sure, but can we be creative about this? Can there be another opportunity? There is a lot of things. For example, one easy thing would be if we always think about a perspective of energy from an engineering background, we will always think that this is probably the right way forward. But when you actually think about the same problem from a non-engineering background, let's say it can be social science, where they have their own mindsets about how energy security should be handled, and there are a lot of other things. And that gives us, pushes us back that, that can also be an interesting direction. So actually merging these two worlds to come up with something, a feasible solution and coming up with a happy, both of these two worlds actually made something out of it, and that would be cool. So I think interdisciplinarity and collaboration is a fundamental step when it comes to research over here in academia.
So I think that sometimes it can be quite challenging actually to really kind of send the message out of our like academic or research environment out there so people can really understand kind of the impact that research we are doing could have. And of course, you and I can speak the same language, but what about when we want to actually really explain people who are maybe not in our field what the research is all about, or kind of if you have something interesting to say or to show, how would you approach that? Just kind of, explaining that to the world.
Exactly. So Sopam, what I've been really looking forward to is make kind of an understanding of your work and what you are doing. So I know you have started raising an answer in some of the latest papers that you published. And I think maybe that can spark off the next part of the conversation. So did you know that energy possibly speaks? It's the headline.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tacky headline, and everyone should, say that in the first 5 seconds, they're like, oh, we should at least read, give it a chance that, what is it? I mean, energy, do they speak? And I think the whole idea behind this is, let's say, we have this podcast right now, and right now we are talking in a given language, and we are human beings. But we can always, have our own ways of speaking with animals as well, which we can assume that we are understanding. But they have their own gestures. So, when you look back, language does not really have any boundaries. We always think that language is about communication, but language can be a bit more than that. It is about perceiving and understanding our environment as well. So I think a wild thought here is, can two non-living beings possibly interact? And energy is just that. Yeah. We cannot really see it. We can measure it. It is a non-living entity around us in this room. So are they talking?
Yeah. I think it makes it a little bit abstract for me as coming from a business perspective here. So can you take us a little bit further here? What are we trying to solve when we ask a question like that?
Okay. So very simply, what's happening is, let's say there is a given amount of energy production right now as we speak in Aarhus. But when I'm sitting here in Aalborg, can I actually estimate or even tell more about the energy production or how they are distributed to different channels in Aalborg without actually looking at internet? Because of course, internet, we have all these digital services that we can always log in and say that, oh, this energy is coming from here, we are getting this much amount of energy, this is the cost. But can it actually say much more that, right now it's not as windy without even looking at it or without even logging into internet? So can we become, if we do not have internet in our lives, can we also do something crazy over there?
Yeah.
So what you are saying is basically that we need to find a way how to communicate with energy?
Communicate with and through energy. That is what I am actually trying to, vouch about.
So do you have, it's very interesting, like what you are kind of trying to say. So do you have some kind of, a background story, how you came up with that idea, or even thinking about that, okay, there is something here that we could explore, or we could ask ourselves that question?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a few years ago, I was watching this movie, it's Arrival. It has Amy Adams in it, and the story is very basic. Again, it's a sci-fi movie, so aliens visit us in 12 different parts of the world, but they do not interact with humans. They just stay in their spacecraft. And that's where humans started to think, well, why are they visiting us? There must be a purpose. And they want to talk to them. But that's where the question arises, that how do we talk to aliens? I don't know if they speak English, if they speak German, if they speak Danish. And they had their own ways of speaking. So just this, this question, how do we talk to aliens? And then there is a question mark. So what basically is a question mark in their language? Because they were also communicating in just a ring structure. But that does not mean anything. I mean, these are just zeros for us. But that was communication for them. So how did communication actually start? And that's where I started looking into these things about how are then, you know, animals communicating among each other? And then can I extend that theory to something that I work with? Can we use energy to communicate and communicate with energy as well?
Yeah, that's very inspiring. And I think it's a, like a really nice story that you're sharing here with us today, kind of also to show people that research is not something boring or something where we like read a lot and sit at our desks, but it's kind of like part of everyday life where you can find the inspiration. I really like that. So what did you then do after that, after having that initial thought?
Well, so my background is more on, you know, when energy is going digital, there are many challenges with going digital. We have to be very, you know, responsible about whatever we do. And I think a lot of the current measures are, you know, pushing us to a very risky scenarios. And there are a lot of, you know, climate change based problems around us. There are a lot of natural disasters. There are a lot of cyber attacks, which happened recently in Denmark as well. So these challenges are only getting more frequent. And sure, we can be digital, but why not think about something else that will shape up in the next 5 years, where energy flowing in the tie lines just tell us more about what's happening around us, and we don't need to log into internet to actually, you know, read the news about energy. Not literally the news, but just read what energy from another place is telling us. So that is my vision.
Okay, yeah, it's very interesting. So what you are saying here is basically that we can utilize this language of energy that we never knew that actually existed to solve some of the current issues that we are facing with. So an interesting perspective on that, and kind of like always a question which other researchers will ask you is kind of like, why do you think that what we currently have in terms of technology is not secure enough or not good enough? So why do we need to dig further into that and kind of, this is what you are trying to examine with your research?
Well, I think it's, I wouldn't say that I'm not challenging the current technologies or where they can go, but I'm challenging how the nature around us is behaving these days. So this is only going to, or this may actually get way worse. And there is no design perspective of how to handle these frequent things. They are getting even more frequent these days. So, well, this is also costly. Digitalization, we have to put up a lot of sensors, a lot of computers and everything. We have a lot of, you know, processing of data. This is costly as well. But when you actually just use energy to communicate with, you know, two entities or two units and communicate through energy, I think that only opens up a lot of platforms or innovation for different things that we are working with. So imagine I just use energy to send this message across, you know, your office, and that could be great, but there are a lot of challenges. So I always try to think about it from a perspective that there are several challenges, but if I have to make that one change that will make a huge breakthrough in the next 10 years, what is that going to be? So if we can put, you know, encompass all those questions into one question and work for the next 5 years or 10 years, that is going to become that can become a big breakthrough for any field. That would be great. And this is really how internet broke down, because it was meant for 1,000 or 2,000 people, but now it's connecting everyone across the globe. I mean, something happening in Japan or in US, you get to know instantly. So why not energy? I mean, energy is also instant.
Yeah. So I'm curious about this. So taking this into a, what can you say, a system or a business perspective, if you should dream big about this, what is that where you see to make a difference, or is it more to inspire other researchers, or can you be a little bit specific on that, or share your dreams or your vision for this?
That is exactly my vision, as you say. You know, a lot of it might not make sense as we speak today, but that's where we have to be a bit more experimental and curious about where this can go. I hope, I really hope, and that was the idea behind this article, that it can inspire other researchers, not just to look at energy as a way of, you know, the energy language, but can they actually find a language in whatever they work with? And as we say that, I mean, language is usually linear. It comprises of words. It should have a meaning. But, you know, everything in this world can be nonlinear if you put it in a given perspective. So I hope it inspires researchers. That's what I can say.
Yeah.
So obviously, there's no solution yet to this, because it seems like a really big question and really big kind of like a new way of thinking. But have you given any thought how to further proceed with actually developing this kind of communication of energy?
Yes. I think without really going into very details, I would say that we are working continuously on this idea. I'm very excited about it. And we are always doing some kind of research on how to actually... So I can explain you with a given example that, let's say me and Monica, we are playing a board game, and it's a collaborative board game, so we have to solve it together. So when we are working on this board game, we are obviously going to have a strategy. We have to agree on a strategy that, oh, this puzzle should fit right after that. And that's how we are going to talk. So that is the context. It is the puzzle solving. Is the context, and that's what we are going to talk about. It's going to be very unlikely that we start talking about a random movie or anything else while playing that. It is likely, but it is highly unlikely. So if we have to understand language based on a given context, so let's say it can be any context, then we can understand what energy is actually trying to say. So if the wind energy is very sufficient, there are some signatures in energy that we can make use of, which can actually tell us that the energy production is a lot right now. So, you know, we can actually make the most out of from our market, from a technical challenges, you know, cost is going to be better. So all these kind of things that can actually help the system operators. Let's start with that. And then the vendors, because then they can also understand that, oh, from this wind turbine, I can actually say a lot of things about how others are doing. So without actually using communication. So they are not really using the linear form of language that we usually are using these days, but just by energy, because there is no way someone can actually hack into the energy flows that we are having. So when there is no communication, we don't have these kind of challenges anymore. So that's a win-win.
Yeah.
So I need to ask you. So will this end up as being a formula? Is that the result of what you do? A formula where you got some input and some output? Is that in reality what you're searching for? Something that can explain something in the energy system?
Yeah, it is more about technically it is more about signal processing, but what it essentially means is it is going to be a translator that we will have at every unit, which only tells us by measuring energy that this is what the received energy tells us about a socket, you know, somewhere in the city center, that's what's happening over there. So it is going to be a translator that we are going to have. Of course, we today have the smart meters, but I think what they are presenting today is quite abstract, because they don't really utilize energy, or they just use energy just to have the quantitative aspect of energy, but there can be more to it.
Yeah, sounds very interesting. And I think knowing you as a researcher, that this is not just the only idea which is so like kind of like different and inspiring. Can you tell us a little bit more about some other ideas you have had in some of the recent years you've been working as a researcher? Were there any kind of like ideas which were kind of like that, like out of box, different, or this was just the only one?
Well, I mean, there were some ideas. I don't know how out of the box they were or they were supposed to be, but this is, I think, very close to Denmark because when we look at our energy system, it's getting very complex. There is no way we can actually find out where our system is heading because we are always plugging in new wind turbines, new solar panels, residentially and even at a large scale. And our system is always, you know, upgrading or developing. Now, when I thought about it, that this is getting very complex, but what about the smallest fundamental particle that we have today? And that is basically atom. So there are many atomic models around us. And again, being in Denmark, I always thought about Bohr's model. And I was able to find out that our energy system, how it's actually developing with integration of new renewable energy sources, it is actually very close to the Bohr's atomic model. So everything around us is, you know, turning into a Bohr's atomic model. So we hope to expand more on that research, but I think we came up with some preliminary results, but really haven't found time to actually capitalize more on that yet.
I could imagine that time for you is actually the biggest constraint. I really have to share with our listeners also here a story. Like a year or two, Shubham and I were in Boston and we were visiting MIT Museum, which basically shows a lot of research and innovation that they have done. And I could say that I could see how Shubham really utilized this time to think about his new ideas, where we were kind of in some kind of bioscience or something like that section. And then he was like, just, oh, look, you see how they do this with like genes and in this bioscience, we could do the same with the energy system. And it's really, I think, really inspiring to see that we could really kind of get ideas how to really improve our sector by just like looking around. And that's also like, that's why I'm really happy to have you here, Shubham.
Yeah, and if I may add, listening to you just really make me think I obviously knew that, but the more people you talk to within the industry, the more you get the feeling I really have so much more to learn. So I really appreciate you, Shubham, come sharing your story and your thinking and your, what can we say, innovative questions that you're trying to solve here. And even though it may be quite abstract, if you find a solution for it, it's definitely something I can see that could make a huge impact for the industry and within the business we are running here. So appreciate that. So I'd like to take the opportunity to bring that also into the last part of the conversation, because now we talk to you. You're at Aalborg University here in Denmark, but there are also some other major research institutions around the world. And Monica, I know you've been doing some, or have something to share here. And I'm asking that question really because from a business perspective, we don't necessarily always know which are the, the people to follow. So this is really meant to be an inspiration for our listeners, again, to go out and follow academia and follow the people working within this field. So I know you've found out something about this, Monica.
Yes, definitely. There are really some research institutes and research groups which are what we call kind of like a leaders or front runners of this field. We mentioned MIT definitely being one of them. We also have NTU in Singapore, a lot of really inspiring researchers who do some relevant research in energy field. We also have ETH in Zurich here in Europe, as well as Oxford, for example, and EPFL in Switzerland. So I know for a fact that Shubham actually worked with a lot of people from those research institutes. So I was also just wondering if you, Shubham, can give us kind of like a little comment or insight into that world, like how it is to really work with people who are so much on the top of kind of like excellence in innovation and forward thinking.
Yes, I honestly don't know where to start because there is so much that I can speak about. But in short, I will say that they don't have any boundaries, and they are really putting themselves on the spot to question anything and everything around them. Sometimes we always say that, well, this is well known, I should move on assuming this. But you know, sometimes that's where I think things might go wrong, because we have assumed many things as we go across the research. Mm-hmm. And usually when I was working with researchers in these institutes, that it's where, I mean, they never really had the best background in energy, but they have usually different backgrounds. And that's when I really understood that they started asking me some of the very fundamental things that we never really think about. They started asking me, so why do you assume that, you know, this is happening? Why not? Have you tried thinking like, why not? We can make a change here. And that only, you know, allowed me to be a bit more experimental with every step, actually, as we go forward. And can there be an opportunity here? And if we can actually see an opportunity, that can be, you know, it can lead it, us to different directions. So I really value interdisciplinary knowledge and also research. This is only going to, you know, get us going forward and impacting lives.
So Shubham, a follow-up on that. How does the different institutions here actually collaborate? So you and Aalborg and Monica mentioned a few of them. Is there a strong collaboration between different universities, or how does that work in the real world?
Well, one formal way of doing this is if you actually go on a visit to any of these universities, and you can probably spend a minimum of 3 to 6 months. And that's where we would say that it's well, it's a decent time to actually make some progress and working with them. Otherwise, there can be a lot of projects that you can apply here in Denmark, and there can be more opportunities out of that where you can actually invite some of their professors to Denmark.
Okay.
And they can, or you can also invite their team as well. So I think, yeah, opportunities are endless how we can work together.
Okay. I would also say that in that respect, we mentioned there is like an opportunity to work between or among the universities. And here it's really important to also mention that we are not excluding companies or business, because at the end of everything, it's like the industry who should follow and actually implement all of our ideas. So oftentimes we can also, or we are very happy to have actually industry on board with this project.
Exactly. So from here, there is an encouragement for businesses to actually connect with academia, either with you, Shubham, with our energy research lab, or with other of the institutions we mentioned. Shubham, I have one final question for you, and I think it's a rather big one, but I need to know, a person like you, where do you learn? How do you learn?
I don't know. I just try to be curious. I just try to be curious. I'm always looking at trying to understand, you know, research and researchers, what they are trying to do in their respective fields, and just try to gain inspiration if something like that can happen here. For example, like me and Monica, we were, you know, discussing this biology idea, and how can we even bring it to energy? Sometimes, and people listening to it, they might think that this is crazy. How can biology be, you know, remotely connected to what these people are facing with energy as a challenge? But we should not restrict ourselves from having these dreams, And that's where I would like to say much more about how we, I mean, Aalborg University is actively collaborating with a lot of industries. So I think that's the reality check of the dreams that we have. Industries really bring or shape our ideas that this is something that actually goes out in the world and can have a tangible difference. So it's very important to have industrial perspectives. And sitting here at the university, we are very lucky that we are working with, we have a very good relationship with all the industries around us in Denmark and also in Europe. So that's a very important aspect. So of course we should dream, but we should be mentored a bit from the actual challenges that are happening, because industry leaders, they know what's really going on. And that's when you can collaborate and make this difference together.
Exactly. And I think that makes a perfect end of this, our conversation here. If people want to follow you, Sophan, or learn more about you, where should they go?
Well, they can always... I'm a very shy personality. I'm not very good at posting, but we can always connect on LinkedIn. I'm there on LinkedIn. Otherwise, I would always like to promote what our department is doing. There are a lot of fantastic researchers here working on many different aspects of energy. So yes, do follow AU Energy. And sometimes you can also channel into what I say. But I can assure you, it's not going to be frequent. I'm very shy.
That's fine. But and that even makes a bigger thank you for standing up here today and sharing your perspective. So thank you for that, Sophan, and have a great day.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and likewise.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Energy Out Loud. Thank you for tuning in and joining our journey through the world of energy. Remember, your curiosity and engagement are what drive this conversation forward. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Follow us on social media to continue the dialogue and stay energized with the latest updates. Until next time, keep the energy flowing and stay charged for more enlightening discussions here on Energy Out Loud. Power off.